Now, at this stage, there arises a very important question with very far-reaching consequences and very extensive implications. The question which arises is, what is the real, what is the basic difference between these three kinds of bodhi? In other words, when we speak of these three kinds of bodhi, when we concern ourselves with them, are we concerned basically with three different types of spiritual experience? Three different types of enlightenment itself? Or are we concerned with one type of spiritual experience, one type of enlightenment, acting in three different ways or occurring perhaps in three different contexts? Or having three different sets of external relationships? In other words, is the difference between these three kinds of enlightenment, these three kinds of bodhi, essential, or is it merely accidental? Some people undoubtedly, on studying first this question, coming across these three kinds of bodhi, conclude that the difference is accidental, or even one might say adventitious. The three experiences are the same. What differs is merely the external relations, whether learned or not learned from another, imparted or not imparted to another. The experience itself is the same. This is the view which one naturally takes when one comes across this doctrine or this teaching for the first time. But actually it is not so. One may say, provisionally, that these three bodhis represent three, as it were, grades of enlightenment within a single hierarchical structure, the third of which is the highest, the third of which is the crown and consummation, as it were, of the whole series. Now, if we want to simplify, to make the subject more comprehensible, we can say that there are not even three grades. We can say that there are just two. We can put the first and the second together and leave the third by itself. And we can say that in the first place, there is the enlightenment of the disciple and the enlightenment of the private or individual enlightenment. And secondly, the unsurpassed perfect enlightenment. Just these two categories. Now, what is the difference between these two? On the one hand, the enlightenment of the disciple and the private or individual enlightenment. On the other, the unsurpassed perfect enlightenment. Looking at them as constituting two groups or two grades, what is the basic, the fundamental difference? Now, obviously, the difference lies in the relation of these two kinds of enlightenment to others, that is to say, to other people. In other words, of course, to the unenlightened, those who don't have that particular experience. So the first group consists of those who gain enlightenment with or without a teacher and don't impart it, don't communicate it. The second group consists of those who gain and impart or communicate what they have gained, what they have experienced. So this is the difference in relationship to others, whether the experience is communicated or not communicated. Now, this difference, we may say, is not accidental or not external. After all, in this particular context, we're dealing not with material things, not with things which can be counted or divided, but with spiritual experiences, which is a very different matter. To take an example, supposing we have something material, say something precious, supposing we have, say, a precious stone, a jewel, supposing we happen to acquire it, to gain it. Well, we can keep it or we can give it away. But whether we keep it or whether we give it away, the jewel itself remains the same jewel. But when it comes to spiritual experiences, it isn't like that in the least. Because something far more subtle, something far more delicate, in a way, something far more complex is involved. So we can, as it were, lay down or formulate even a rule, a principle, or even a law. And we can say that a spiritual experience which can be kept, as it were, to oneself is not the same as, is different from, one which has to be communicated, in the sense that it is an experience whose very nature involves that it should be communicated. Now, where does the difference lie then? The difference between these two kinds of spiritual experience, that which can be kept to oneself, and that which must, as it were, be communicated. Now, the difference lies obviously in the feeling of selfhood. The feeling of selfhood, as you know, is a very common one. It has various forms. Some of those forms are very, very gross. Other forms are infinitely subtle. The grosser forms of selfhood are very easily detected. But the subtle ones, especially these very, very subtle ones, are extremely difficult to connect, to detect. So the subtlest of all forms of selfhood is that which occurs in connection with the gaining of enlightenment itself. We can have a certain experience which we may take as an experience of enlightenment or something tending in that direction. But then there attaches itself to that experience a feeling or a further experience that this is my experience, in a sense that this is my enlightenment, this is what I have gained. And when that comes about, when that sort of experience or that sort of attachment of selfhood takes place, then we can think that it's not, or that it is possible not to communicate with others. Now, this may be, from the mundane point of view, a very high, very sublime experience, but it is not the experience of unsurpassed perfect enlightenment, in other words, not the enlightenment of the Buddha himself. So long as that experience, so long as that feeling of my can be attached to it. If this is an experience about which we can think that it is my experience, then it is not that ultimate experience. Now, when we speak of conversion to, in Buddhism, in terms of the arising of the bodhicitta, that is the will to enlightenment, it's this second of the two kinds of enlightenment which is meant. In other words, the unsurpassed perfect enlightenment. Not the enlightenment of the disciple, not private or individual enlightenment. Sometimes, in this particular context, in this particular connection, it's called enlightenment for the sake or the benefit of all sentient beings. So in this particular context, in the context of this particular phrase or expression, the will to enlightenment is a will to unsurpassed perfect enlightenment, that is, to that enlightenment in which there is not in here any shadow of selfhood, and about which, therefore, paradoxically speaking, one cannot even say that it is mine. So what, there is no question of keeping it to oneself. It has, as it were, to be imparted, communicated.